This is John Quinlan, your guest host on today's A Public Affair. On today's show, a celebration of the life of community leader Nan Cheney.
I've heard it said that people come into our lives for a reason, bringing something we must learn, and we are led to those who help us most grow if we let them, and we help them in return. Well, I don't know if I believe that's true, but I know I'm who I am today because I knew you.
And John, the song that you played at the very beginning,
yeah,
was so appropriate because, you know, I don't know where I would be. I just would be a different person.
Yeah.
Those people were turning points of my life.
The voice is a familiar one to so many of you listening today, that of Nan Cheney, a much-beloved Madison community leader who passed away on April 30th. As we'll hear throughout the next hour today, Nan was an amazing wife, mother, and grandmother, roles ever so comfortably co-inhabited by a woman who was also an extraordinary political organizer and peace and social justice activist. Nan was reflecting about the impact on her own life of the lives of three other remarkable women who had recently passed away in an interview on my program Forward Forum last year. But it could have just as easily have been one of us reflecting on what a privilege it's been to have Nan in our lives and how she's inspired us and brightened our lives in ways that will remain with us forever. This is John Quinlan, your guest host on WRT's A Public Affair, filling in today for Judith Sears-Poisson. In the next hour, we'll explore the life of Nan Cheney in her own words and with the help of family, friends, and colleagues, including our guests in studio, Bonnie Block, Ed Garvey, and Joanne Elder. Nan touched so many lives, and perhaps yours was among them. We'll be back live in just a moment, but now we begin with a pre-recorded interview I conducted earlier this week with Nan's daughter, Nina Cheney.
I knew you because I knew you. Because I knew you. I have been changed. For good.
Well, let me just, start at just a really basic place if I could and just ask how you'd like for people to remember your mom.
Well, she was a lot of things. I think a really neat thing to know, I mean, people know that my mom accomplished a lot of things in her life, but, she was also a great mom to four kids, and she provided so many great experiences for us as we were growing up. As busy as she was, she still was an awesome mom, and we used to go camping and paddling, and she and Dad took us to D.C. for a peace march, and I guess it's just that as busy as she was, she still had time to provide a real rich childhood and even adulthood. I mean, she never really did stop parenting us, which is great.
I think about things like, your mom going to Selma and becoming so involved with the world and world affairs, and yet, coming from a small town of Menominee. And have you reflected on how she made that journey?
Well, I know her parents were very politically involved, and the story she used to like to tell us was that her parakeet as a little girl would say, "I'm a good bird. Vote for Stevenson." And so she came from a very politically aware family, and but you're right. She was from a small town, and I think her mom was involved and her dad both in different ways. I remember one time she asked me to come to a luncheon, and she said, "Oh, do you want to come to this? I've got an extra ticket." And I said, "Well, sure," you know. And it turned out to be the Women of Distinction Award, where she was being honored, and I just couldn't believe that, you know, she made such a little thing of it. Mm. But one of the things she said in her speech at that awards was that she felt that being active and being politically aware and working for these causes was just as natural a thing for her as attending Girl Scout meetings and hanging up the laundry on the line. She just thought, she said it was just a part of being a mother and part of being a woman. I think she never lost track of the fact and was always grateful for the way that she was able to give her time to these different causes. And, you know, I gave my dad a lot of credit for really being someone who would just encourage her to go out and do these things. And she said to me, "I know that I was lucky."
You know, a number of people, I think I told you, had reflected on your dad's, you know, supportive role. And
he was always behind everything she did, and you know, they made a lot of financial contributions to different causes too, and I was always so impressed how consistently they did that. He was you know, pretty much the wind beneath their wings, and
yeah.
Anytime he could go along and attend things, he did.
Yeah, well, that's a beautiful way to put it. Well, actually, where I was going to, I remember I was going to ask you about, after your first observations, just about growing up and camping and kind of discovering the natural world, you know, reading back over some of her Facebook entries for the earlier part of the year, struck by an outing to go see the Eagles on the Wisconsin River, and then just all these beautiful short descriptions of signs of flowers beneath the snow or the oncoming signs of spring.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
How has that influenced your own life, or what appreciation did Nan have for the natural world?
Oh, gosh, it was endless. I mean, she, you know, she fought for wetland preservation, and I remember when I was a kid thinking, What's so cool about wetlands? What's so cool about marshes? She taught us all that stuff, you know, about how important they were for the environment and how they were being filled in and built upon, and it was causing all kinds of problems. She taught us bird songs and, you know, how to identify frogs. I mean, we got in our camper, the six of us, and I think we visited just about every state. We used to get out of the Smoky Mountains in the spring, and we go out west, and we had so many trips that we took, all six of us, and just, you know, learning tons of stuff about the outdoors, and that's certainly something that all of us have carried on. Prairies, she and Dad planted a prairie. I think it was the first prairie, a residential prairie, in, if there is such a thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In someone's backyard, in Dane County, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
And they used to burn it every year, and that was a big event, and every year we'd have this big fire, and even though they did it every year, there are certain neighbors that always call the fire department, but it was a great annual event.
You know, one of the other things I was recalling in reading some of the articles today, was the fact that she was there in Selma, and just, you know, her commitment to civil rights. You know, what did she teach you as children about living in a world and in terms of understanding and getting to know people who might be different than yourself?
Mm-hmm. For one thing, I have to say about Selma that my dad came home from work and found a note that said, "The kids are all over at the Overbecks, which is our neighbors. And I've gone to Selma, so my dad didn't even know she was going to do that."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was kind of laughing about that as he was telling me that. I said, "Oh, my gosh, can I say that on the radio?" I said, "Sure." So she took off and went without even, but, you know, it was just part of something that was important to her. Another thing I remember about growing up is that she was very much against the war, and as I said, she took us to Washington, and we marched around the White House. I think I was probably about, I don't know, 14, 12 or 14, something like that.
Mm.
And it was against supporting the wartime economy as well. So she started something called Women for a Peaceful Christmas. And she always wanted us to make handmade gifts anyway, but this was something that she really got together with other women And I think it spread out across the country to a certain extent, where it was just something that people weren't going to go shopping and not buy all this stuff for Christmas presents. Instead, they would stay home with their families and make things and give those as gifts. And that had a pretty big effect on me, too, and I guess all these things have carried forward. I guess I'm kind of pretty much a chip off the whole block, but I don't think I'll ever be able to accomplish even a fraction of what my mom did in her lifetime.
And that was Nina Cheney reminiscing about her mother, Nan Cheney, who passed away on April 30th. This is John Quinlan on A Public Affair, and very pleased to be joined in studio for the remainder of the hour by three distinguished guests. Joanne Older, Monty Block, and Ed Garvey are here to help us in celebrating, remembering the life of Nan Cheney. Before we do that, hey, Mark, could we cue up track three, just skip over one, and set this up briefly. Several times through the interview, we mentioned, made reference to Selma, and we were all laughing at the notion that Nan had taken off to Selma and hadn't necessarily even told David, just dropped the kids off, and it was someplace that she had to be. Flash ahead to the year 2006, and I had done a radio show live from Selma, remembering some of that history, and gotten to know a remarkable woman down there who had been 11 at the time of the march. And Nan had heard that show, and when she was traveling around the South a few weeks later, she stopped in at the museum that my friend Joanne Bland had started down in Selma. And I spoke with Joanne last night. She had just a brief reflection on the significance of folks like Nan who came down to Selma at that crucial time in history. You could play track three, please.
This is what was coming all colors into that matter. What color you are, love, justice, and peace. You take a stand, and I really, really appreciate people like Nan who came down to help, who saw injustice and dedicated their lives to doing it. I hope someone can say those things about me when I come.
All right. Joanne Older, let me start with you and just go around the table here if we could. And okay. Could you give a sense of, if you pull the mic a little bit closer, and give a sense of the different realms in which you knew Nan Cheney?
As Doug Erickson said so well in his journal article, Nan, whose pleasant demeanor masked one tough cookie, there was nothing tough-looking about Nan. She was always stately and beautiful. No matter what she wore, she could have been a model. And in this demeanor, she could speak truth to power. She didn't yell and scream. She was there at every gathering for peace and justice. I don't know Nan. I didn't know Nan personally in the years she worked for progressive people in the legislature. I saw her at various rallies we both attended over the years. We got involved with the Justice Center when she helped us get one of their mini booths for, I think it was GLSEN, or at least it was a gay organization. Next, she tabbed us as recipients of the Peace and Justice Award, and we acquiesced in order to raise money for the center, and I think we did. And with everything she did, she put herself in the back row. That is, she never was in the front row, not because she was tall, and that was her excuse, but she was in the back row holding the peace sign. I got to know her best as we sang together these past few years with the Raging Grannies. Later, I would like to share a song that is all about Nan.
All right. Appreciate it. Bonnie Block, what are your recollections?
Well, I think I first knew about Nan when in 1991, when the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice started out. But I didn't really work with her until 96. And I had just finished work with the Lutheran Peace Fellowship and Fellowship of Reconciliation. And I met Nan at a sit-in at the Capitol against W2. The network at that point had a welfare task force. And Nan and I got to talking, and I said, oh, boy, I'm really tired of traveling. I'd like to work closer to home. Well, the next thing I knew, within a couple of weeks, I had been... I had agreed to organize the next couple of assemblies and do the first directory for the network. And Nan was like that. She was so good at involving people in things. It was just a really talent of hers. I had a chuckle when Nina was talking about the Women of Distinction Award. I was at that event, and my favorite story was Nan gave this very graceful talk, but one of the things she said is that her children, she remembers her daughters saying, let's go play house. We'll go to a meeting. And I think that was something that Nan did and was involved in a whole lot of things. And she was also a mentor to me because I followed her as chair of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. But Nan was always there to talk to and to bounce ideas off. And then, as Joe said, we've gotten to know her probably best in the last, I think I joined in 2007, the Raging Grannies. And it's such a neat group. And in some ways, I think also epitomizes Nan because it's a way of us telling truth to power, but we do it with humor and in a way that makes people laugh, even though we get to rant and rage against war. And I think that's something Nan was really good at, pulling together the rage against war and injustice and environmental degradation and at the same time humor and some fun.
With that in mind, guys, if we could pull up track 4. I don't know if we're ready for that. Since we're not, Ed, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think what I liked about Nan, and many things, but she wasn't just against war. She was for peace. I think she wasn't just against wetlands being used up. She was for planning. She wasn't just against the developers. She thought there was a positive role that could be played by environmentalists. And I think she just had that positive attitude, whether you were talking about the legislature or you're talking about the military budget or talking about Walmart, whatever the issue, she had a positive message. And I think that's awfully important as we think about her legacy, that she inspired us to do the right thing, not just be against the wrong things.
Something maybe all three of you can comment on that Nina was alluding to is this was definitely very much a partnership, and all three of you sitting around the table are part of partnerships that are not only marriages but also political unions in some sense, in the sense of the things that you work on together. But could you reflect briefly on David and his supportive role and many of the things that Nan did? Ed, you want to start, man?
Yeah, I think when you think of Nan, you automatically think of David. It's like Linda Farley and Gene Farley. I think there are people that you just automatically think of them as a team. And David was always there, always supportive, always helping. I never heard him complain about anything. And he's just been a joy to work with over the years. And the two of them together just presented such a comfortable package, if you will. So for us, it was a great pleasure.
We should mention that your partner, Betty, is actually a part of the Raging Grannies.
She sure is.
That's right. Mark, is it possible to cue up track 4? This is a performance of the Raging Grannies this past Thursday night at Social Justice Center, 10th anniversary. We'll give you just a little taste of Raging Grannies.
We're the Raging Grannies, and we want you all to know that war is not the way to peace, and we must all say no.
And Mark, actually, if we could go on to track 5, I want to play this a little bit. This is actually part of an interview I did a year ago. Nan was my guest in a show that featured some tributes to three other remarkable women who we had lost recently: Midge Miller, Leah Zeldin, and Becky Young. And in this particular segment, Nan is talking a little bit about kind of how campaigns have changed during the years. And Ed, I want to get your perspectives on this. Memories do you have? I mean, did that feel like at the time that it was something really special that you had?
Oh,
you had so much going on.
Yeah, and you could never say no to Midge. That was another thing about that era. People, at that time, in order to get elected, you really needed people working on your campaign. Mm. Therefore, she could go back to all of us to get our opinions, or we could go to her and expect that she would be available. I don't think that that's so true anymore when you can have automated phone calls. They don't even need us anymore to make the dreaded phone calls. Well, we surely don't need to stuff envelopes anymore. Yeah. And we have to say, too, though, that they represented us.
Mm-hmm.
And we gave them strength, too.
Absolutely.
I mean, we are kind of a bubble. And so they could do things that perhaps others who were truly worried about being reelected, and that seems to be the big thing that they all worry about as soon as they get there. But Midge had such and Becky and Mary Lou, they had so many really committed workers behind them. So I hope we don't just lose that. It's so important. I remember sitting on the beach at Vilas Park with our kids who were swimming, and we were getting...
And we'll return to that clip in just a second. But while we were talking about campaigns, I was thinking about John Nichols' piece. And one of the vignettes I think he had there was this picture of at your campaign headquarters, sitting empty with not a whole lot of resources in a race against Tommy Thompson. And all of a sudden, Nan arrived on the scene. And even though she's talking about maybe modern campaigns not relying as much on volunteer power, I would imagine you might disagree with that.
Well, yeah. Of course, I didn't win.
There we go. But, yeah.
But I remember both Nan and Midge said to me that I was very fortunate that I was not spoiled by incumbency. So, but there are so many good people. I couldn't believe it. I think the first Democratic campaign where there were paid volunteers, so-called volunteers, was when Herb Kohl was running. And I thought, I couldn't quite believe it, because it seemed to me that the Democratic Party should be all about volunteers and people getting involved and making this part of their lives. But I could always count on Nan being there, and I could always count on Midge, and I could always count on the Farleys and John Patrick Hunter and Mary. And it was more fun. There were more PhDs at our table stuffing envelopes than most people ever get in a campaign through the whole time. So it was always a joy to visit campaign headquarters, because they were people who really cared about the issues much more than they cared about whether you won the election.
I was one of those envelope stuffers a couple of times. Uh-huh. Because Nan.
You were a little slow, though, Bonnie.
Yeah, right. I have to agree. I wasn't there all as much as she was. But
just kidding.
But I loved one of her lines, and it may have been after that campaign. She was getting disillusioned because of the money. That was, you know, and the soundbite TV ads that really, you know, don't give much information to base an election on or a vote on. But what she said was, and she also said that whatever your issue was, campaign finance reform needed to be your second issue, because otherwise you would never be able to get your word out. And I think that really is even truer today.
That's for sure.
But the other line that she had that I really liked was, she said, you know, I didn't leave the Democratic Party. The party left me. Mm. And I think what she meant by that was part of that, not so much relying on the grassroots, but top-down kind of elections with corporate and special interest money sort of controlling the message. And I always found that very interesting, because I tend to be a sort of, well, like the grannies. We're a disorganization.
I wanted to bring up one other phase of Nan's life that was totally not political. I was in an early morning exercise class. Now, Nan showed up every day, almost every day, at 6:15, 6:30 in the morning for this morning aerobic dance. And then she organized a special Fridays to go hiking and whenever the weather permitted. She also organized, when the weather didn't permit, a knitting club. Now, this was a whole different group of women. These were not necessarily your politicos. I didn't join the knitting club, but I'll bet there was politics spoken. And she was just so with able to be with ordinary people and persuade.
All right. Well, if you're joining us midstream, this is a public affair. Here, your guest host, John Quinlan. My guests in studio are Ed Garvey, Bonnie Block, and Joanne Older. And I believe we do have a call on the line. What's your comment or question?
Hi. I believe in remembering, Nan, that this is good and right, and I'm also appreciating very much the other comments of your guest on how, as a populist, this person became disillusioned with the way things worked in government, because that kind of echoes my own experience over a fairly long lifetime at this point. And I want to thank you for having this show. Sometimes it feels to a real progressive who's willing to dig in and do things that there's not a lot of other people out there, and sometimes I just feel like the lone nut out there with the anti-war sign, you know, watching the world go by. So thanks very much for having this show to let me and other, you know, possibly isolated activists out there know that people like Nan are important.
Oh, we really appreciate your comment.
I'd like to comment on that.
Please go ahead.
Because I think that that is exactly what one of the strengths of the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice is. And I think Nan's involvement in the beginning of it reflects some of that. Part of the reasoning for having a network like this was exactly that way we did not feel so alone. During the last run-up to war in Iraq, there were about 60 peace vigils that were being tracked by the network, and they were on the website. And so, and then maybe 3 years ago, there was a gathering of all of the people all over the state who vigiled for peace. And neat stories about what happened and passersby and, you know, all of the things that went on when you do this. But I think that idea of linking up people and of realizing that you may be alone or feel like a lonely voice, but there really are lots of other groups. And I think it's a tribute to Nan's organizational capabilities. I think when she stepped down as chair in 1997, I think it was, there were 50 member organizations throughout Wisconsin. Now there's close to 170. And I think that progressive voice, and I guess that's what I was referring to, because, you know, sometimes I get disillusioned with all political parties. And I think that progressive voice, the Fighting Bob Fest, you know, that whole voice of a new or a different way, where it's bottom-up rather than top-down sort of organizing, legislating, you know, acting. There's a wonderful line about politics. The sad duty of politics is to bring about justice in an unjust world. And I think that's what Nan was about.
Let me just check in. Guys, do we have more phone calls by chance? Or, okay, let's take our next call, please. Your comment or question about Nan Cheney.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Steve?
This is Steve.
This is someone we were expecting to check in with. This Steve Starkey. And Steve, one of the aspects of Nan's activism we haven't had a chance to really touch upon, something that you were very involved with, and that is the Social Justice Center. Could you just explain a little bit about the genesis of that and Nan's role in making that real?
Sure. Well, I actually went to school with Nan's children. And so I was aware back in the 60s and 70s of the Cheney family. I grew up in Crestwood on Madison's far west side, and so I knew of her for a long time. I really became more familiar with and worked with Nan beginning in about 1995. She was involved with Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice, but she also began to organize around creating a social justice nonprofit kind of incubator or building. And at the time, there was a lot of interest. There were 20 or 30 groups that had signed up as being interested in coming to meetings and talking about it. But she really couldn't find a building. And she did a lot of research, and the volunteers from those groups did research and were trying to find the right location. And I think there was, people were interested, but they didn't really sign on the dotted line in terms of, we're going to go for it and raise a lot of money and really make it happen. Well, in I believe it was June or July of 1999, the Willie Street Co-op had moved across the street to the other side of Williamson and built a new building, and so the old co-op building became available. And Nan was convinced that that was the right size of building, it was the right location, it had a progressive history, a lot of people that were the sorts of people who would be donors and clients already used the Willie Street Co-op building, and so it was a familiar kind of gathering place. And so she felt that this was what we were going to go for. And so she, I love the story, she called up the realtor and she told them that we were interested in buying the building. She gave them my telephone number, and she then went on vacation.
Of course.
And it was, so the realtor called me and said, come on over and look at the building, and she went on vacation. It was a really good thing that she did, because she had 18 months of really hard work ahead of her. And so when she got back from vacation a week later or something, we had already looked at the building and talked to the realtor and kind of begun to do some planning work. The problem was that the building was available like now, and they wanted to sell it immediately, and there were some other people, other businesses that were interested. And it looked like the building might slip through our fingers. And at that time, we had no one that was signed on. We didn't have a partnership. We didn't have an agreement. We didn't have a nonprofit organization to own the building. We didn't have any money. But Nan said, this is it. This is the project. It's going to happen. We're going to do it. And so we made an offer on the building, and I think we made an offer of like $350,000 on the building. And we said, well, they'll never accept it, so it doesn't matter. Well, they did. The Willie Street Co-op did accept our offer. And so then it was like, okay, well, now we have to come up with $350,000.
Oh, wow. Hey, Steve, I apologize. I wanted to actually at this stage bring in Brenda Conkle, who, as you remember, gave just a beautiful tribute to Nan the other night. And she, this is actually a kind of a perfect place in the narrative. But before I leave you, and I apologize, we've got a lit-up switchboard, so I'm going to have to cut this one a little bit short today. But one of the other stories I think you're uniquely equipped to tell is, so why did she have these ducks in front of her on the podium whenever she spoke?
Well, we were when we were talking with the Dane Fund and trying to get a bridge loan so that we could get a mortgage on the building, they kept saying, great idea, we love your idea, but you don't have your ducks in a row. And so we kept planning and organizing and trying to get our plan more professional. We kept coming back to them, and they'd say, well, it's getting better, but the ducks are still not in the row. So she bought some rubber ducks, and she would line them up on her desk and, you know, kind of manage them and make sure they were in a row. And so that became kind of the symbol for the campaign.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us. Again, I'm sorry to cut you short today, but we really appreciate you sharing your memories. Guys, could you go back to track two, please? And cue that up. And this, again, is an edited version of a very moving testimonial that Brenda Conkle, who wears many hats, former alderperson and executive director of the Tenant Resource Center, and someone who's very involved with the Social Justice Center. This is a very moving testimony she gave this past Thursday at the Social Justice Center 10th anniversary.
Just exactly how does one come up with the words that are adequate to honor Nan Cheney? I call this Mission Impossible. Except I know that Nan wouldn't let me accept defeat. Instead, she would gently push me forward and encourage me every step of the way, even if it seemed impossible to me. I and many others in the room know Nan Cheney from our little corner of the world at the Social Justice Center, but I'm continually amazed by how many lives in the community she touched how many organizations she worked with, and how often she made a positive impact on some important issue. She was essentially our unpaid staff person that was there for us at the most critical times, usually 20 to 40 hours a week. And she did everything from demolition and hauling concrete out of the basement to scraping tiles off the floor to attending finance meetings, giving us directions on what the building should look like when it got done, leading the charge for us to raise hundreds of thousands of dollars to make it all happen. And when she was all done and we got the building all in place and financed, she came back and planted trees and flowers in a terrace and came by to meet them and garden them when they needed it. And she did much of this, of course, with David's help. But the most important story is the hardest one to tell. Nan was an amazing woman who brought sunshine and smiles to every life that she touched. When reminding us all that we need to do, and she always was reminding us all that we need to do better for the world that we live in. She never let anyone, especially elected officials, get away with doing anything less than what was possible, or you'd hear from her, do better. And when she said that, you just knew you had to, because she'd smile at you, and you know, it's just, you couldn't not do what she wanted. She was a mentor and a role model, and in fact, one of our sayings in our office is, I want to be Nan Cheney when I grow up. She was someone who would make us laugh so we didn't cry about the latest injustice in the world, someone who encouraged us with her persistence and positive attitude, so much that there's hardly a square inch in the Social Justice Center that doesn't remind me of her, her smile, and some silly story. And that's why I made the big decisions that we made at the Social Justice Center to start out with, what would Nan want? And that's how we usually make our decisions. Left your mark on the world in a beautiful, amazing way. So the Social Justice Center and all of us involved with it, and all the people in the community we impact, are just some of the many grateful beneficiaries of her great and wonderful life. We couldn't have done it without her, and we won't miss her greatly. And I'd just like to say thank you to the team family for lending her to us for all that time.
All right. And by the way, we want to thank WYOU for helping us with a dub of that particular excerpt and for being here today taping this show. And you can look forward to seeing this or recommending it to your friends at a future date when this time of sharing will also air there. The picture I get from that I keep hearing in terms of the Social Justice Center is Nan with a sledgehammer, you know, slugging away at the walls in the old Willie Street Co-op building. And you know, she truly was just invested in everything. We will come back to our very distinguished panel here, but we've got some callers who've been very patiently waiting on the line. And please, caller, go ahead. What is your thought?
Hi. I remember so well one event when we were up north trying to stop Wisconsin from being turned into a gigantic mining district, and we were also working for the rights of the indigenous people of this area, and we were working really hard. We were having a really hard time, and one event I remember looking up, and there was Nan and Dave Cheney and Peggy and Don Baim, who are also members of this wonderful generation of people, who were there in their graciousness and their standing beside us as warriors, and I want to thank them all.
All right. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think we have one other caller on the line. Is that correct? And caller, what are your comments or questions regarding Nan Cheney?
I'm an economic refugee from the Ozarks. I came to Wisconsin in 1990, and I just had the impression that all of you folks had been working with Nan for centuries before I showed up, and so it's a surprise to hear some of the recent dates that you've begun working with Nan. My first real memory of Nan was in 1991, and she seemed to be the chief organizer for the original Wisconsin Network for Peace. And it was at that original meeting in the Capitol building where the term justice was added to the organization or network's name statewide. In the early years, there was a little bit of controversy inside about the term founder. Who was the founder of the network? And, of course, Nan never hinted that it might be her. But the discussion that you guys have mentioned about Nan putting herself in the background and putting other folks forward makes me wonder if co-founder might be the appropriate title for Nan Cheney in regard to the Wisconsin Network for Peace and Justice. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your call. Bonnie Block has been researching this, and I have a vested interest in this since I'm making a documentary about this history. So, so what do you
got? Well, there's two stories about that. One is that Nan, who was at the time the legislative aide for Frank Boyle, and I think they did call the initial hearing, which was, you know, like 50 organizations and 350 people that showed up. But Midge Miller and Fred Risser also have some ownership in terms of the founding and I think that original hearing. So there were lots of people, I think, involved. But clearly Nan was one of the staff people. When she retired from her job at the Capitol, all of the network came home. The mailing list, then you know, the newsletter was sent from there, and she was staffing the organization. So she was key in those first years to keep it going. Because a lot of times peace organizations start over some war, and when the war's over, everybody goes back home. And what I think she helped to do was sustainable kinds of things, including peace and justice, including you know, all of the environmental issues and all the other stuff she was involved in.
You know, you remind me, she was also very involved when you mentioned Frank Boyle, for example, Harvey Stower, two of my all-time favorite legislators. And so whenever you'd go do something in the Capitol, Nan was there also pushing the agenda with those who had a chance to enact legislation. So she was she just could not be replaced. We don't get the kind of people that Nan Cheney was in the Capitol very often, and it was wonderful to have her there as a prodding the legislature into doing the right thing.
Joe Elder, you know, as we're talking about peace and justice and the two being related, and I would imagine you have some perspectives that Nan probably had a much broader interpretation of what that word peace meant in practice and how you lived that out.
Well, she emphasized justice.
Yeah.
So all the things that are anti-war, she could pick those songs that would say, we want no war, no more, practice no war, no more. Anyway, we have lots of those songs among the grannies. And as I mentioned, the grannies are going to be singing at the memorial on Monday, and you'll certainly want to give that address and time and bring a potluck, and which is the way she would want it. And we're going to be singing, "Does Her Song Die Now Nan Is Gone, or Does Her Melody Live On?" And the last verse is, "Nan's songs helped quench the flames of war, spoke peace, showed us what life is for. Joining her voice, we sang along."
Oh, thanks so much for sharing that, Joanne. We have another caller on the line. Caller, what is your comment or question?
Hi, it's Jackie Picorni.
Well, hey, Jackie, welcome.
I thought I'd call in since I couldn't be there in person, but I just wanted to emphasize everything people are talking about, and I wanted to say that the story about that I was fortunate enough to finally meet Nan in person in the last year, and just that experience was an incredible one. It was at the Social Justice Center. I work with a group and allied on this new visionary idea we have of that will likely be called the Ally Wellness Cooperative, and we met with Brenda and Nan at the Social Justice Center to kind of hear the full story about how the Social Justice Center came into being. And I just thought it was very interesting hearing the story that Steve Starkey just relayed, basically that sometimes you just have to fly by the seat of your pants of a nonprofit
right.
volunteer organization, but at the same time, just the passion, and it just kind of hearing their story and how they ended up succeeding and just celebrated their 10-year anniversary kind of helped us as a group in that capacity have faith that we could keep moving forward and eventually gather this project and make it work.
Jackie, I was going to play a clip from my interview with her daughter Nina, and but I think it occurs to me that you're probably in the right place to answer this. Nan had this special rapport, I think, especially with young women who were activists in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. And you know, I think Nina and I were remarking on, you know, that was probably reflective of her own youthfulness and her own enthusiasm and other things. But did you find that enthusiasm to be infectious?
Absolutely. I mean, that's another reason I wanted to call in as a younger person, you know, a younger female activist in the community, you know, up and coming. I mean, someone like Nan is going to be one of my role models moving forward. I also am a physical therapist and specialize in geriatrics. And, of course, I've always been drawn towards the older people that have that sort of energy, that, again, never looked their age, never seen their age, and that's what I want to strive for in the rest of my life. And she definitely had that energy about her.
Jackie, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
Guys, can we queue up track 8, please? We'll do one more clip just to hear Nan in her own voice. And again, this was a wonderful opportunity that I had to speak with her about a year ago. The occasion was to mark the legacy of Midge Miller and Leah Zeldin and Becky Young, who we had lost recently. And of course, as we mentioned, Nan's loss, we're thinking, you know, so many folks of that generation, we need to appreciate, we need to capture this history. And I think there's some ongoing efforts to do that. Hope to talk to you maybe over the summer about next time I come on the show. But what I wanted to play was something that's got a little touch of humor in it, which, again, is very important to any discussion about Nan Cheney. And this was talking about the opportunity that Nan had. I think it was in either the 60s or the 70s, and Bella Abzug was in town. And, of course, so many of the women political leaders of this time were folks who were also on the national stage. And there were so many opportunities for folks to meet those coming through town. But Nan's got some interesting remarks, not only on Bella, but also something I think that even Nan had a challenge sometimes. And this circle of women that she traveled with, getting a word in edgewise was a little bit of a challenge. And she had some kind of a creative solution for that. So if we could play track 8, please.
I got chauffeur Bella.
Really?
Yeah.
With
that
or without the hat.
Political clowns. Midge said I could go get her from wherever she was. But I had a thing I wanted to tell her to support. And now I can't remember just what it was. But really, Bella was not so interested in listening to what I had to say, but more interested in telling me what she had.
Uh-huh.
I finally stopped the car, parked it, and said, "Now this is what I want to tell you." she had to listen.
She probably didn't have to do that with Midge. I think Midge was a listener, too, wasn't she?
She was a listener, too.
Yeah. I'm sure they were a match for each other.
And I remember, though, having Midge, both Midge and Mary Lou were at lunch at my house, and there must have been a couple of other people, too. It was very hard for anyone to get a word in edgewise. And that's when I devised the talking stick thing. If you had a wooden spoon in your hand, you could talk, and then they had to listen. But they surely did have paragraphs of things to say, and we all wanted to know it. But now and then, it was a good thing to get a word in.
That's great.
All right, I think we have a caller or two on the line. And caller, what is your comment or question?
I just wanted to say that I had the great pleasure to work with Nan at the Capitol in the late 80s and early 90s. And the thing I wanted to share is that she always said, we're doing good while having fun. And that is what I remember about Nan. She was always so gracious, and she was just fun.
All right. Thanks so much for sharing that.
You're
I think
welcome.
We have another caller on the line.
Yes?
Yes, please.
Me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Great. I just wanted to say that I never got to meet Nan, but I know she was a Raging Granny, and you were talking about that in the program. And the Raging Grannies are going to perform again at the bike ride kickoff extravaganza at the Just Coffee and RP Pasta's warehouse and parking lot on June 6th, Sunday, from 4 to 10 p.m. We have this big We have this bicycle ride of 10 people leaving from Madison, Wisconsin, and going to Detroit for the U.S. Social Forum, and we're having our kickoff extravaganza with bands, food. There's going to be Takai All-Stars is playing, and also the Raging Grannies. And so I just wanted to put a plug in for that and say that the spirit of Nan will definitely be there.
Well, and Nan would be very grateful, I'm sure, that you're continuing to get out the word about what's a really memorable opportunity to hear the Raging Grannies. Thanks so much for sharing that.
And I have to say that Nan did try a couple of times to do the talking stick with the Grannies.
Yeah.
And we don't listen very well.
That's a group I can imagine.
And also the having fun, that really resonates with me because Nan and I were part of a couple of sit-ins that really turned to sleep-ins in Senator Cole's office when we were trying to get him to not vote for supplemental appropriations for the war. And it was fun. I mean, even though we were on the conference room floor.
I've just been handed a note, by the way. Speaking of community leaders who we've lost recently, Mary Lou Deal passed away in March. Her obituary appeared on March 13th. I guess we have time maybe to go around the table one more time for some last thoughts, if we could. Joanne?
Well, I just want to emphasize that I hope folks will come out to her memorial because it'll be a wonderful gathering of like-minded people.
Bonnie, did you have any last thoughts?
Yeah, I did. I think I'd like to urge people to keep working on the causes that Nan devoted her life to because I think they're issues that are critically important to our future.
All right. I think we have time for maybe one-minute clip, clip 10, if you could. And this is her daughter, Nina, talking about Nan, her courage, and her perseverance.
It strikes me that whenever I've seen Nan, no matter how daunting it is, you know, she seems to have this optimism and this perseverance that kind of carries her through stuff.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I think that she, well, I remember going through those really highs and lows with Martin Luther King. That was an awful, awful time. Robert Kennedy, terrible things that happened. But you're right, I think it was just her way, was to gather up and just keep moving forward, knowing that, you know, she did always take the long view, even though sometimes it seemed like there wasn't any hope, especially during those times. But, yeah, I think she called forth courage so many times in her life that pretty much courage just lived next to her, and they were just best friends, and you know, they just worked together.
Well, thank you, everyone who's participated, Joanne Older, Bonnie Block, Ed Garvey, and all of you who phoned in with your memories of Nan Cheney.
Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
You're very welcome.
Nice job.
This is A Public Affair. I'm your guest host, John Quinlan. Have a wonderful weekend.